This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
I'm David Remnick. Welcome back to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm going to make a confession. I'm not a huge fan of what's called holiday movies, the stock movies that get cycled out on Christmas Day. But a Christmas movie starring Bill Murray, written by Bill Murray and directed by Sofia Coppola, I might give that a look. It's called A Very Murray Christmas. Richard Brody, who writes about film for The New Yorker, is a huge fan of Sofia Coppola. She's one of his favorite directors, and he sat down recently to talk to her about this film and about other movies.
It's a musical, and music has always been important in your work, but this is your first full-up musical. Is it a form that has tempted you for a while?
No, I never thought about doing a musical, and it wasn't even until we started working on this that I realized we were making a musical. But my dad always loves musicals and comes from theater, and so he showed us a lot of musicals, and this project actually originated from me just wanting to see Bill sing. Streets are white with snow. Somehow it morphed into a TV special that they were thinking about, and it evolved into our holiday special. But it came from me wanting to see Bill croon.
I'm sure that you'll forgive me if I don't enthuse. I've come down with those Christmas blues.
What was your favorite moment in filming A Very Merry Christmas?
For me, it was fun to do these musical numbers because I never did that before. I think that there's a scene when Phoenix plays the French chefs and they do a song that we had to kind of segue from that idea into this party scene, and it was a little bit awkward. And like Bill can be in real life, he knows how to just get everyone together and make a party. So he improvised all of that in a way that I think comes off very seamless, but it wasn't scripted, and he just knows how to bring a party wherever he goes. And he has a Christmas party every year, and he kind of mixes up all these people that you would never meet and make people sing and do things that they wouldn't normally do. And I think there's something really fun in that.
We need music. Christmas music.
Music.
All right, we're going to need someone to sing a Christmas carol. We're going to need a volunteer, and that person is going to be you right over here, Dimitri.
Please, no.
Go to your childhood, your infancy if necessary, and just bring us a Christmas carol. A one, two.
On the first day of Christmas, my...
Okay, you're not a singer, and we don't have time to find out if you're a dancer. Let's try... Come on, my little brandy angel. You've got, look at you. Something.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen when the snow lay round about, cool and crisp and even.
I could watch you sing that all night long, but honestly, no one knows the second verse. Am I right? No one?
You're done with it, right?
Yeah. Sorry. Okay, how about you fellas play something that nobody knows?
When you find for some sad reason you're alone this Christmas season and the joys of home.
Did you always know that you were going to make films?
Not at all. I spent a lot of my 20s or my early 20s being really confused and stressed out about what I was going to do because I wanted to be an artist and I wanted to be creative, but it never occurred to me to be a filmmaker. I liked making stories, and my dad always was explaining screenwriting to us and talking about things as if we're all in the family business. But I was always interested in fashion from an early age, so I wanted to be a magazine editor. I loved fashion photography and then photography, and I ended up making a short film, and that's when I realized that it combined all of my interests. And when I read the book of the Virgin Suicides, I heard some people were going to make it, and I kept thinking, oh, I hope they do it this way. I hope they don't mess it up. And I started working on a screenplay because I had so many ideas of how I thought they should make it. And just my love of that book kind of pushed me in that direction.
What was it about the Virgin Suicides that inspired you, that made you want to film that in particular?
I just loved the book, and I could really see visually how it could be. And I wanted to show this kind of really girly aesthetic and feminine point of view that interested me. And I didn't feel like it was expressed so much in movies, or maybe growing up with macho filmmakers, I was into doing something that was really coming from this kind of girl's point of view, and the kind of sense of humor and playfulness, and then the sadness that was mixed together. And I was into doing something that was really coming from this kind of girl's point of view, teenage girl point of view. And I just really connected to Jeff Eugenides' writing, and the kind of sense of humor and playfulness, and then the sadness that was mixed together. And
there's a remarkable combination of melancholy and playfulness in the movie. And it's something that you've come back to in all of your subsequent films. And something else that comes through in Virgin Suicides, as well as in your other films, is the sense of isolation. Girls cooped up, literally imprisoned in their family home, lost in translation, two people trapped, in effect, in a hotel somewhere, a man trapped in a hotel.
I know. And then Marie Antoinette, she's trapped in her gold palace.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know why I go back to that theme, but when we were shooting this show at the Carlisle, I thought, oh no, here I am with Phil in a big fancy hotel again. I didn't mean to do that. But I like the setting of a hotel for being this kind of insular world where certain people are all kind of thrown together, and you keep re-meeting them, and people kind of stuck in a part of their lives. And I guess moments of transition.
It's funny because I've always thought of Lost in Translation as a kind of Christmas movie.
Really?
Yeah, I always thought of it as not just alone in a hotel in a foreign country, but alone in a hotel at Christmas time.
Oh, that's...
Even though there's nothing explicitly Christmassy about it at all.
Yeah, I don't think of it as being at Christmas time or any decorations. Maybe it's the twinkly lights that remind you. That's funny, I never thought about that.
Just the sense of particular sadness at being alone.
Melancholy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you doing here?
A couple of things. Taking a break from my wife, forgetting my son's birthday, and getting paid $2 million to endorse a whiskey when I could be doing a play somewhere.
Oh.
What are you doing?
My husband's a photographer, so he's here working, and wasn't doing anything, so I came along, and we have some friends that live here. I wish I could sleep.
Oh, me too.
You mentioned your love of fashion and style. And that doesn't surprise me, because in your films you seem to take a tremendous pleasure in the way things look, in the actual visual texture, fabric, skin, wood, glass, metal, and the way that they play off against each other in a single frame, which, to my way of thinking, conveys tremendous emotional depth. Forgive me, I think that there are critics who think otherwise, you know, who think that the presence of exquisite style
takes away from the depth.
Gets in the way of emotional depth.
Yeah, I feel like I've been criticized for being style over substance, and I think you can have both. Or I just try to make something that I love, and I'm a visual person, and what I like about the medium of film is to create a visual atmosphere and focus on things that you think are beautiful or interesting. And also, some of my films talk about superficiality, but I don't think it's a superficial topic to look at that.
There's a quietness to the way that your characters express, or rather suggest, their emotions, which also I think leads to grotesque misunderstandings on the parts of critics who think that as a result they're simply being unemotional.
Yeah, I think I try to make things that feel real and naturalistic, and a lot of times in movies people are saying all their feelings and how they feel, and my impression is that in real life people a lot of times don't say what they're feeling, but you can get it from a gesture, and that can be more powerful. And I loved that movie Brief Encounter, which I thought about when I was working on Lost in Translation, and so much is conveyed by, you know, a gesture or a look, and you get so much of the feeling. So
a Brief Encounter, David Lean's film about a wartime romance taking place in a train station, in and around the train station.
You all right, darling?
Yes, I'm all right.
I wish I could think of something to say.
It doesn't matter not saying anything, I mean.
I'll miss my train and wait to see you in
yours. No, please don't. I'll come over with you to your platform, I'd rather.
Very well.
It's a beautiful film, and it's very simple and touching between these two characters. So I was thinking about that when I was thinking about Lost in Translation, although it's very different.
One of the constants in your film is the liberating power of art, whether it's the records in Virgin Suicides or whether it's karaoke in Lost in Translation. Somehow, art brings people together. Is this something that you feel emerges from your own experience?
Oh, that's nice if that comes through, because that's something that I believe. And if it's a painting that I connect to, that's someone else made and they're thinking that way, or a film that I really relate to. And
that's, of course, what Bill Murray experiences in A Very Merry Christmas. His depressing moment in front of an empty stage is redeemed by singing with his newfound friends.
Yeah, I love that there's a sweet spirit of people coming together, and that you can find connection and joy in unexpected places, and that you wouldn't think that he would have a warm Christmas with the people that are around the hotel and working at the hotel. And it goes from some cheesy sellout TV show to something really sincere, I hope. I don't know, that's the part that I find joy in, is when you connect with people, and it's always nice when it's a surprise.
Especially the moment where it goes from being individual singers to being the collective, when they bounce, I saw the light back and forth, that's a moment that gives me a catch in the throat.
Oh, that's so nice. It's funny, when we were watching it, I forgot about that Maya and Buster start singing, and actually Bill mentioned Saw the Light for Merry Christmas, and I love that song, so I was happy that he wanted to include it.
Richard Brody speaking with Sofia Coppola. Her film A Very Merry Christmas is out on Netflix.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.